Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Patricia Corey, the radio program that dares you to think outside the box of convention. If convention remains on planet Earth, we're watching it just going berserk in every way. And that's part of my job, make sure I keep you on your toes about what's going on and what's hidden and what you want to explore in the ever-changing reality that is our daily bread. And you will not be disappointed today, I assure you. Before I bring on my guest, however, I just want to make a couple of announcements. One is, oh my God, the book is finally here. It's here at my home. It's still not available on Amazon.com. I'm talking about Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Whales and the Dolphin Beings. And, you know, kind of ties in with what we're talking about today, because the book proposes the whales and dolphins as very high conscious galactic beings that are not mere Earth creatures, and brings forward their wisdom about the life in many dimensions and in many realms. So it's available soon on Amazon. Thank you for pre-ordering it. And I do have some copies here, but they're going fast. Okay. And that said, my next message is, I'm making a movie out of this, and I'm not waiting for the Hollywood kahunas to transmute it into some Hollywood foolishness. I'm doing a documentary. It's a big budget film, but it's a budget film, bringing forward the wisdom of the whales and dolphins and their plight and the urgency of assisting in transforming the oceans. I really need a miracle, and that would be another donor. We've got already one investor donor who has offered to help. If any of you want to be part of this, we really, really need help. So please let me know by getting in touch with me as soon as possible and become part of this noble effort. Okay, that's it. Oh, third message is, remember, it's super moon today, tonight. That means the Earth is closer to moon is closer to the Earth than it has been in apparently about 20 years. Has the California people worried about, could this be bringing in another earthquake? There has certainly been a lot of signs, like the million fish kill-off in Redondo Beach in California. So there's great anticipation of what this is going to be like and a little bit of anxiety. And I'd like to put it out to you. Let's just keep it anticipation of celestial beings doing what they do. And get out and look at this moon if you can. It should be quite a spectacle. And with that, I would like to introduce my wonderful guest. His name is Ron Garner. I asked him to blow the lid off, and he said, "You got it, lady." He's the owner of the original Roswell UFO Museum. He's a paranormal UFO researcher, and his specialty is Area 51, which I am extremely interested in. Never been near there, but apparently he's been there, and we're going to talk about Operation Majestic. We're going to talk about Dr. Burish, who is an esteemed scientist, who's an expert on Area 51. And I want to get into Bob Lazar, the mysterious man, nuclear physicist, who worked at Area 51, but nobody seems to know this man. So we've got plenty of great stuff for you coming up. So please tell your friends, if anybody's around, grab them, bring them close to the computer, and tell them to be prepared to have their socks blown off and listen to the hidden truth revealed. Thank you, Ron, for being on my show.
Patricia, I'm loved to be on your show. I didn't know you were working with the whales and the dolphins. I have some of the most exclusive footage ever shot of the orca whales up off of Canada. So we need to talk about that at a later time.
Oh, great goddess, God, protector of wonderful things. Are you suggesting you might be willing to donate some footage?
Yes, I have a partner in the project. I haven't talked to him for a couple of years, but we went up there and shot this footage. It's just the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. It won a couple film festivals. I haven't talked to the actual producer, but now that I know that you're interested, I'll get in touch with him. He lives in Palm Springs, and I'll see what the status of this is. So if you're interested, it'll be a wonderful addition to whatever you're already doing.
Okay, I'm so grateful. And just for the rest of you, I just want to mention that this is what manifesting is. Ask and you shall receive. Some of the most miraculous words. I really am thrilled. How am I going to talk about Area 51 knowing that you've made this generous offer? Thank you from the heart.
Well,
we're putting it together.
Glad to do it. We need to save the planet. And, you know, so just an interesting side note. I've interviewed maybe 36 abductees, and everyone is totally involved with ecology and trying to save the planet. And especially Dr. Dan Crane Burrish, he is head and shoulders above all the others in working to try to save the planet, which is an interesting thing. The ET people that have interacted with the abductees and the contactees, depending on what term you want to use, they all feel that they have a destiny. And the ET people have influenced that. It's an interesting satellite that I'm pursuing in another documentary. I made 3 documentaries so far, and I have a couple more on the drawing board, so we need to talk about that too.
Oh, well, fantastic. We'll talk about the end of the show or later, and if we can join forces for the whales and the dolphins and the oceans, because there's nothing more important at this moment, not even ET disclosure, than getting this planet back on track with great urgency. And I think we're all in agreement on that.
Absolutely, and those beings out there are part of our family, and we need to take care of our family.
Right, and, we talk about the lizards and the reptilians, and they managed to destroy Nibiru, and they managed to destroy Mars, and they're really at work trying to destroy here, and we can't let that happen.
I agree 100%.
So thank you. I'm so excited now. That's just the best news ever. Thank you so much. We will definitely talk together, and I thank you for your immediate response to my call. All right, well, let's get talking about how in the world did you get into Area 51? Let's start at the beginning of your connection to this mystery.
Okay, it started way back in the 70s and 80s. I was a director and a producer of some documentaries and things, but it really ramped up in 1980. I was working in a mortgage company in my day job in Beverly Hills, and the manager, a woman manager, and I went to lunch one day, and she said that her brother worked at Area 51. I said, really? And I said, can I interview him? And she says, well, I'll try, but it's hard because people are watching his every move, so I said, well, okay, well, and what was the basic story? And the basic story was that he was a low-level person there. He worked as a welder, and he said that he was walking down one of the halls one day, and there was this being in this one office, and he had one blue sock and one brown sock, and things are all disheveled. So her brother went in there and told this being, why don't you clean this place up? You know, it's a mess. And this being said, verbatim, look, fella, I just put on this body every day just like you put on your coveralls, so get out of here and don't bother me.
You've got to be kidding.
That's what, and I tried for like 3 months I talked to her brother on the phone, but every time I tried to set up an appointment, there was a white van out in front of his house, and he was afraid to go on camera.
That is amazing. I just put this body on every day to come into the office?
That's right. You know, and that's a whole other discussion, which we could talk about later on. But then I have a lot of connections. Are we okay on the sound here? I hear some. Hello?
I hear you perfectly.
We're okay. So I spent a lot of time in Las Vegas. I have some European friends there that I visit often. So when Bob Lazar came on Channel 2 over there with George Knapp in 1987, 88, 89, I was glued to the TV because I was already enamored of did you see the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Absolutely. It's one of my faves.
Well, if you remember Richard Dreyfuss, you remember what his passion was? To go to Devil's Mountain. That was his whole thing.
Oh, sure. That was everybody's passion in the film that had been...
That was his passion. That's right. So I tell people, Area 51 is to Ron Garner what Devil's Mountain was to Richard Dreyfuss. That's right. Been my total obsession. And one of my dear friends and researcher, Bill Hamilton, maybe you've heard of him. He's a very famous researcher. So we would have lunch at Westwood at a deli there every so often. I'd been in this field for over 20 years at that time, and he'd been in it over 40 years. So we would compare notes. And in 1993, at a UFO conference, I met this fellow, Bill Uhouse. Have you ever heard of Bill Uhouse?
No, I haven't.
He was an engineer. He was a fighter pilot in World War II, a Marine fighter pilot. Then he went to work for Wright-Patterson, and he was recruited to work at Area 51 and at Los Alamos to back engineer the alien craft. It is called an alien reproduction vehicle. I have some of that information on my website, which is area51et.com. And I'm going to be adding more. I actually have the schematics. If I had the funding, I could actually build a public UFO, which is a whole other story in itself. So yeah, Bill Uhouse just talked there and said that he was working at Los Alamos with an E.T. person called J-Rod, R-O-D. And that this person, J-Rod, was an E.T. engineer. And they would have meetings, and then the engineers would discuss how they were going to build this alien reproduction vehicle, and this alien engineer would give them the schematics, give them the mathematics, and he dealt with them for a number of years. And he drew a famous picture of him. If he just Google. I love the fact with the internet you can find out. Anything I say, you can just Google it and you'll find out more about it.
That's
so
right.
If you Google Bill Uhouse, you'll see his famous drawing. And this drawing was done in 1993. He was at Los Alamos and he was actually sitting in a conference table with this E.T. person sitting opposite him, with a man's shirt and slacks, because it kind of dressed him up so he would look more normal. And the code night name was Jay.
Pardon me, but I'm having a little difficulty with the idea of a dressed-up alien just put the body on for the meeting.
Yeah, I know, you're still stuck on that one.
Looking
so
normal.
This E.T. Right. So, and Edward Teller is the one that called the meeting together, the father of the hydrogen bomb. And there were 18 other scientists in the room there at Los Alamos with the E.T. engineer. And this is what Bill Uhouse said at the conference, and I interviewed him auditorially in 93 and 94. So I began to put two and two together with Bob Lazar and Bill Uhouse. And then a friend of mine who was a psychologist at the VA hospital in Las Vegas said, there's a fellow you need to talk to. I said, okay, what's his story? Well, his name was Bob. That's his real name. I won't give his last name. But she said that Bob was a guard, a Wackenhut guard at Area 51, and that he has a very interesting tale to tell. So I said, great. I went and interviewed him. He wouldn't go on camera at that time. This is in the mid-1990s. And he said that he had been recruited. He was in Air Force security and went to work for the police department in Chicago, and then Wackenhut recruited him to work at Area 51. So he was working in Area 51 in the early 80s. And he told me one day he was driving his Jeep, the white, famous white Jeeps that they drove, and there was this UFO appeared right above the Jeep and shine this light down on the Jeep. And he had a partner there, and he tried to outmaneuver the UFO, but he couldn't do it. And finally, it just shot up into space. So his partner, Bob said, the next day, he quit Wackenhut. It freaked him so bad, he said, I'm out of here. And then he went on to tell me that one night he was giving security there in the hallways. He had his long flashlight, the one door was ajar. So he shined the light in there, and he saw three bodies, two shorter ones and one long one, with four-fingered beings in this glass case. So he closed the door, and he was more afraid of his watch commander than he was the ETs. In his report, he said there was a door ajar. He didn't say what he saw in there. So then he told me that sometimes the guards stay out there at Area 51, and he was putting on his boots one day, and this really deadly scorpion bit him. So he had to be medevaced out of Area 51, and that's what the problem was. He had sort of a fugue, and that's why he was in the VA hospital. But as a result of that, he still had his badge. So he took me in the bedroom in his sock drawer and showed me the actual badge of, you know, his Wagonut credentials there at Area 51.
Wow.
Now to get to the main story, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you actually physically haven't been inside Area 51.
No, you're not public. It's not allowed. Sometimes the family are allowed once a year, but they don't show them anything of any importance. I've been to Rachel many times. I've given talks at Rachel. It's a population of about 120. And it's basically a park there where they have the motorhomes and so forth. And they have a Quonset hut. And on the Memorial Day every year, it's sort of a convention there, and we all come there and have a big party and compare notes, and all the desert rats out there that are watching all the UFOs flying around tell their stories. So back to Bill Hamilton. So I was talking to Bill Hamilton at this deli in Westwood in 2000, and I have to get my dates right, in 2002. This was May of 2002. And Bill told me that he was working with a story of this microbiologist. At that time, Dr. Dan Burrish, his given name at birth was Crane, and he's changed it back now 2 years ago to Crane, but he's known on the Internet as Dr. Dan Burrish, microbiologist, who actually took tissue samples from an ET person in 1994 and 95, in a clean sphere, a hyperbaric chamber that they kept this ET person, and his code name again was J. Rod. The code, his actual name, I can tell what it is now, it's Kala with a hard K, C-E-A-L-A-H. And Kala was from the Zeta Reticulum star system. And in their culture, numerology is a big deal. That's a whole other story, but it's too complicated to go into. But the reason that his code name was J. Rod is because on the typewriter keyboard, J is the 10th letter. So he pointed at the 10, at the J, which meant 10, and the bar is Mayan for 5, which he was telling our people there, including Dr. Dan Burrish, that he was from 15 light years from planet Earth.
Wow,
and
that's
he
amazing.
Was there, and I have on my website an autopsy report that Dan described to me. I have Dan on camera for over 100 hours on camera, and I spent probably an additional 100 hours off camera. He's almost like my stepson because I've written 3 books with on my own and one with his parents. I was best man in his wedding 2 years ago. So I know the story backwards and forwards. And I was skeptical at the first, naturally, because that's my nature. But everything he said to me, every interview that he's given, everything I've checked, I have all of his transcripts from his academic background. I've given those transcripts to Linda Howe, to Stanton Friedman, to Richard Dolan, and I told Jim Mars a couple of weeks ago I'm going to send him a copy of everything. So the major researchers have his academic credentials, and I asked them to check it out, and that they're in the process of doing that, because if we're going to establish that he actually was in contact, direct contact, I call it Close Encounters of the Sixth Kind, because he actually has entered the genome with this needle, this pins gun, pressure induction needle system to take tissue samples, because the ET person was suffering from a neuropathy disease. And a neuropathy disease is very painful. Another friend of mine Actually, this friend in Vegas has had it, and it's terribly painful.
So let me just interrupt you a minute here. So
okay.
At the time he took the sample, J-Rod was still alive. I'm assuming he's no longer alive.
No, he's still alive. He went back home December of 2003 through a stargate in Egypt, in Abydos, Egypt.
In Abydos? All right!
I'm telling you. And on my website, I'm going to have the complete drawing of that portal. I have it, but I haven't mounted it on my website yet.
We really have to talk because Abydos is a key, is a place I spend a lot of time. It's very key to one of my books called Where Pharaohs Dwell. It talks about Abydos being the place where the crystal skull, the master crystal skull is buried. And so that really fits.
Yeah, I've had some major events happening with Max. Do you know about Max?
Oh, yeah.
Crystal Skull Max by Joanne in Houston, Texas. I had a major event. I had an ET person appear fully formed down to the every detail as a result of working with the crystal skulls. So I'm really pleased to learn there's so many correspondences in our lives.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Abydos is a place where I go at least twice a year. And I actually got myself locked in the temple for 5 hours at night because I wanted to feel the energy, experience what was going on in there. So privately, probably in another time when you come on the show publicly, I can tell you a little bit about what I experienced there. But to tell me that that's a stargate fits right in with my experience.
Well, I'm good friends with Graham Hancock and Robert Bufall. I was the videographer for the Society for Scientific Exploration out of Princeton for 2 years in 97 and 98. And I've given some of this information to Graham, but I haven't fleshed it out more. I've learned a lot more since I talked to Graham 3 years ago. But no, Egypt is key, and it's interesting what's going on there right now. I'll give you my opinion about what that may be. This is just speculation now. This is not from inside information. This is just my expert testimony about what I've seen there. I think that part of what's going on there in Egypt is that our black ops are getting their assets there for 2012 because there's going to be a major event. What Dan has told me that 2012 is about the sunburst is going to open the natural stargates.
That's right.
And it's going to open the unnatural stargates also. So the black ops the last 5 or 6 years have been trying to shut down the man-made stargates, but they're not sure if they could close them up in time. So
that's right.
I think that next year, if this event, the sunspots, takes place, from a military point of view, they don't know what's going to come through those stargates. So they're positioning themselves, and so part of the turmoil in Egypt has to do with our going in there and doing what the black ops do all the time is try and prevent us from having the knowledge that of what this is all about, and that's part of the big story here. The big picture is that these beings. I don't quite buy into the Serpo story. Patricia, are you familiar with the Serpo story?
The Serpo story?
Yes.
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Well, Serpo, S-E-R-P-O. Dad Crane Burrish said that's not the name. It's a different name. But if you Google that, that's a story of 12 scientists being recruited to go to other star systems. And basically, that's the story of Close Encounters. If you remember Close Encounters, the opening scenes, you had the fighter jet, the propeller jets, World War II jets, in the desert. Their engines were full. They were running perfectly. So, and then at the end, when the UFO came down, the pilots came down the ramp. So, if you understand what that's about, that's time travel.
Yes.
And I often say in my lectures is that when you see these craft flying around, they're flying time machines.
That's right.
And that they warp space-time. When you go faster than the speed of light, which is simple to do, then you warp space-time.
Let me just interject something here. For those of you who have read the Syrian Revelations, I know you're getting a chuckle out of what you're hearing, because Ron is validating just about everything that's in my books. So, you know,
in
the Fascist talks about we can travel faster than the speed of light, and a few physicists said your books are inaccurate and blah, 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 and they're not. And here we've got a validation. Very cool. Before we go on, I just want to say something to you. I was in Abydos last year, really one of the most sacred places on the planet, and Hazahi Hawass had begun and was well into the construction of this abomination of a cement building that was pointed. It was a penis, a gigantic cement penis pointed right out at the temple. It was supposedly going to be for selling knickknacks and whatever in this simple, quiet place off the map. And when we got there, I didn't expect it, because I've spent so many hours in that sacred land, and I just got shocked. I started crying. I couldn't believe it. And when people asked me what was going on with me, I said, they're doing everything they can to break the energy of this temple. And so I agree with you.
They're not going to,
No, they're not going to. But we need to do everything we can to make sure that they don't, because they're very organized. But we're better.
Well, Robert Bouval lives there in Cairo. He's invited me to come to his place, and I'm sure he's on top of that with Graham and the other researchers there. So,
well, I know Robert Bouval. He comes from, we all have a different slant on Egypt, and we don't all agree, but one thing we do agree on is that all of the fences and cement walls, I mean, Giza Plateau, I used to walk off the pavement, if you can call it pavement, and step onto the sand and walk into the arms of the Sphinx, and now that's a complete, it looks like a concentration camp. High cement walls.
So sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but Zayawas is gone, and we shall see what the new day will bring. But anyway, I just wanted to because you really thrilled me when you said that J-Rod left and went back through the Stargate at Abydos. That is amazing and great validation. Thank you for that gift.
Well, you're certainly welcome. And that's the part of this story. I'm very knowledgeable, since I'm the curator of the UFO, the original Roswell UFO Enigma Museum. Being a curator of a museum, I need to know the stories and the folklore. And I've interviewed most everybody in the field. And right now, there's symposiums everywhere, but everything is 20, 30, 40, 50 years old that they're talking about. What I'm talking about is right now, it's my humble, informed opinion. If we could get into Area 51 and Los Alamos, we could sit down and talk to an ET person right now. And I've been trying to bring this to the attention of other UFO researchers, but they can't get their mind around it because it's so mind-boggling that they just can't. And I produced a 10-part DVD series about Dr. Dan Burry's crane that outlines all of this detail.
So can you give us, first of all, I'm going to tell people at the end of the show all about your site again, so that they can go when we're done, and I don't want them to interrupt listening to you now to check it out.
Right.
But those DVDs are available on your site, and we're all going to want to have them. But can you give us an overview of Dr. Burish's information? I mean, there's, how many hours? 100 hours for sure. You're going to have to be very clever in synopsizing it. But what is the gist? What is the right now information that comes forward from those interviews?
Well, what the gist is when he first saw the J-Rod in 1994 in this 120-foot diameter clean sphere, it has oxygen and nitrogen and about 5% hydrogen, because that's what the J-Rod needed for healing, and was similar to the atmosphere on his planet in the Zeta Reticuli system. And when Dan first walked in there, he wasn't quite prepared for what he was going to see. He was in a totally encapsulated suit because we don't want to contaminate the ET person and vice versa. So he looked across this 120-foot diameter clean sphere, and the J-rod was kind of hunched down. He looked almost like an insect, and he was kind of a brownish pink in color, and he was suffering from this neuropathy disease, so he couldn't walk upright. He sort of struggles to move around. But right away, when the exterior capsule, as you enter the clean sphere, they call it the ambassadorial suite. So, Dan, I asked him if he was able to communicate with the J-Rod. He said, well, 120 feet. So when he entered the ambassadorial suite to go into the clean sphere, he began to get all of these images and conversation in his mind. So the interesting part of this, and most people that know this story, they've only seen bits and pieces on the Internet. It's shot poorly. There's the poor sound. But one of the main parts of the story, Dan was abducted when he was 9 years old from May Boyer Park in Lakewood. I'm about 5 miles from that site right now where I am here in California. And he was taken on board the ship. And when he was on board the ship, he met the J-Rod when he was 9 years old. And he wouldn't again see the J-Rod until 28 years later. So when he first met the J-Rod, there were other microbiologists that had senior years and senior experience. But the J-Rod pointed to Dan and through telepathy said that he wanted Dan to be the main microbiologist to try and adjust his genome to cure this neuropathy disease. So Dan was fearful when he first saw the J-Rod, but he had the classic dark eyes and kind of a pebbly skin. And they began to converse. And Dan's, I have his medical report, and Dan's IQ is 200. And he said that the J-Rod was a lot smarter than he was. So maybe 300, 400, who knows. But the sad thing, and this really bothers me a lot, is that the J-Rod told Dan that he wanted to wear clothing, but he wasn't allowed to. Think of Abu Ghraib and Gitmo prison. The military mindset is it just irritates me no end.
You hear that?
They wouldn't allow... They wouldn't allow him, and he was embarrassed. Dan described his genitalia. I have it in the website. And he was a male. He could tell the difference. And
why would they allow him to have clothes for just typical military omnipotence, or what?
I think they were trying to torture him. They could raise the pressure in the clean sphere if they thought that he was not telling the truth. And part of what Dan's reason for being there, not only to be a medical doctor, in effect, but that's what a microbiologist is, but also to do the translation. So after he would spend time with the J-Rod, he would be debriefed. But he only told the debriefers about a third of what the J-Rod told him in his mind. So that was one of the reasons that they had Dad with the J-Rod in Egypt, because I guess this portal was about to open, and they wanted to have someone that could communicate with the J-Rod to hear and understand what the people on the other side of that Stargate were thinking or doing. And that's a whole other story. It's too long to tell right now. So Dan was working with this J-Rod. And he became his friend. He saw him two or three times a week for two solid years, and became his friend. And the J-Rod showed him in his mind his wife and his mother and his son back on Zeta Reticuli, and he missed them. He wanted to go back, but he had a mission. It was his mission to come here. He landed in near Kingman, Arizona, in 1953. So at that point, he had been a prisoner, a captive. In fact, the J-Rod called himself captive.
God, you're killing me here, because, I mean, you know, to know that we torture ETs is It's more than I can.
I mean, it just makes you cry. It just, you know, there are some bad AT people out there. I think maybe about 20% do not have our best interest. But this poor J-Rod, he was a scientist. And there was either, I'm not sure, but there was either two or three other beings that crashed near Kingman, Arizona in 1953. The other two or three went to Los Alamos, and this J-Rod Kayla, is his personal name, went to Area 51. Now, I must clear this up. Area 51 is a regular military base. It's a part of Nellis Air Force Base. But the most secret part, the most secret base, is S-4. That's about 12 miles south of Area 51, Groom Lake proper, in Papoose Mountain. The military, I'm really good friends with John Lear, and that's a whole other story about Lazar that we don't have time to get into.
You're going to have to come on once a week for the next 2 months.
Right. And what John Lear told me is what his information of his flyboy friends out of Area 51 is that the Corps of Engineers took off the top of the mountain, the Papoose Mountain, this is back in the 60s, and built all these underground bases, then put the mountain back on it, so that the Russian satellites couldn't see what we're doing. And that's why they fly most of the UFOs at night, so that the satellites can't see them. And that's when Bob Lazar saw it, took John Lear and his family out there in a motorhome, and they videotaped it on Wednesday night in 1989.
All right, let me just
some people that don't buy the Bob Lazar story, you got to talk to John Lear. John Lear is one of my best friends, and as honest as the day is long, and he said that this absolutely happened to Bob Lazar.
I just want to back up a minute and ask you. You said that J-Rod was on assignment. Did he tell you what his assignment was? He was a scientist, obviously, but whatever possessed him to come into the...
It was very, very involved and complicated. I'm not a physicist or a scientist, but basically because... It's called Convergent Timeline Paradox. And this has to do with Einstein-Rosenbridge promoter, which is how they bend space-time. So your listeners out there need to Google Einstein-Rosenbridge promoter. And there's whole scientific protocols that explain how that works. Michio Kaku has talked about it, too, on Coast to Coast and other television programs.
He's been on my show, too.
As you know, he's wonderful. So, in fact, amazing. I want him to know about Dr. Burrish because Dr. Burrish has the schematics to how to build a Stargate and how to do what they call see the future. At Area 51, and I'll have this on my site soon, Dan has drawn it for a good friend of mine, Michael Charette, in 3D CAD drawing, of Area 51 S4, where the 9 UFOs are stored, where the clean sphere is. It almost looks like a photograph because it's so well drawn. And Dan said that at that facility, we have those UFOs, and one of them we think was, we're not certain, but it's one of them was the crash in Roswell. And it was partly covered by a tarp, so he couldn't see it. But that's part of what's going on. That's what Bill Uhouse is doing, is taking that craft and back engineering it. That the J-Rod, with these other, either two or three other beings, they were from a different time than he was. So he was kind of a spy. And the other beings, when they came here to the Stargate or however they got here, they were actually going to Los Alamos when they crashed. I did find that out. But the other ET people on board the ship, they kind of treated this J-Rod, Kayla, differently because he was a super scientist. So he came here for some other super scientific reason, and Dad's never explained that to me. There was a mission.
Hold on, I've got a quick question about J-Rod. Given that he was treated as an animal... and caged. Why did he get? How did he get away from the military? Why did they let him go back?
Well, that's a real interesting story. And if I ever make a feature film, I'm talking to some major Hollywood people now But it's the dramatic ending, and I won't go into too much because this is going to say this. But in December of 2003, Dan was there with the J-Rod, and the J-Rod was in a stroller. It's encapsulated in order to produce the hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen. It was a stroller like the IT machine. You've probably seen those. Mm-hmm. With a controlling lever up in front. And Dan was there to do the translation because he was friends with the J-Rod, K-L-A's his name, and they were waiting to see when the Stargate opened what kind of communication would be coming through. So Dan is there with the J-Rod talking through telepathy. The J-Rod is pleading with them. I'm your friend. Help me. Help me, Dan. Help me, Danny. He called him Danny. No, he called him DNA. That's a whole other story. That was what kind of a joke between Dan and the ET person. The ET person had a great sense of humor. He was telling jokes all the time. the ET is pleading with Dan in his mind to help him. So Dan, in his mind, he says on my camera, he says, screw it. He ran forward and hit the joystick on this stroller, and it forced Dan, the J-Rod, and the stroller to hit the Stargate. It was about 100 yards ahead of them. It looked like a mud wall. It hit the Stargate. The stroller bounced back. Danny bounced back. The J-Rod went through it, and Dan was stripped naked, and the Black Ops and Navy SEALs are the ones that guard the inner part of Area 51. So the Navy SEALs came with their automatic weapons pointing it at Dan, and the head of Majestic, I won't say who it is right now, but it was there. So that's Dan. So they had to medevac him out. But he actually sprung J-Rod to go home. It was against the rules, and he suffered mightily because he did that.
What happened?
He rescued the J-Rod to go home. You can imagine that scene in a movie.
First of all, you're talking about Ad Abydos.
Ad Abydos, that's right.
Wow, that's heavy duty, man.
What I'm happened to you?
You're talking about a place where I spend a lot of time and know the people and know the temples and the whole deal, right? And
there's
I can
no
tell you that
we've
been in that temple when it started spinning out.
Right.
I mean, there was one moment when I was in the temple with my group last year where the floors started rolling. We were chanting, and the floors started rolling. The dimension, the room started, the walls were, well, it was like an LSD trip. I mean, the walls were like waving.
Really?
And I thought, this is where we leave planet Earth.
Well, it's so interesting. There's no accidents in the universe. Synchronicity is happening here, so it's wonderful.
I'm so glad I brought you. I met
we
you.
Can beat
I
each other
to
this
way. I found you. All right, so
this is why we're here, and these natural stargates, you know, at Machu Picchu and Stonehenge and Bermuda Triangle in Egypt, they're going to open, I think, next year. But
yeah,
the Black Ops are worried that these unnatural stargates could open, and God knows what's going to come through. So that's the way the military mindset is. They want to shoot at everything. That's their favorite thing.
Well, this is why I've been telling people, when we go to a lot of these places, more and more, there are more and more fences, more and more restrictions, and it's because of that. They are very fearful of what we're opening up, because I think it has a lot to do with all of the intense meditation and spiritual work, energy work, that so many people are doing at these sites.
I agree. I want to bring something in here that's very important. At this Area 51 S4, Dan has drawn this through Michael Sherratt, this CAD drawing expert, and right there with the clean sphere is what they call the looking glass. Now, the looking glass is a device that we can see the past and the future. And your audience needs to know about Dr. David Anderson. Go to AndersonInstitute.com. If we went to northern New Mexico right now, we can go there and we can see the past and the future, and we can modify the past and the future slightly with our intention. Now, Dr. Anderson was on Coast to Coast on January 31st, 2010. Please, it's archived. Please go to Coast and listen to it. Art Bell said it's the most important interview he's ever done.
January 21st Stargate, this year?
Yeah, January 31st last year, 2010.
Okay.
And these Stargates Looking Glass, they're actual devices. And what Dr. Anderson says to Art Bell last year, that when people come to his institute, and you have to be invited there, the super security there, because all the corporations and military want to steal his equipment. And he explains all that in a four-hour interview. But I tie this to Dan Crane Burrish because, you know, I've been working on this Burrish case. And this is my ninth year, because this all started in 2001. With Bill Hamilton, and so he was telling about the Looking Glass that way back then, and then when Dr. Anderson was on Coast to Coast last year, that's more confirmation, more synchronicity. And Dr. Anderson said that of all the people on planet Earth, the Russians have it, the Chinese, but of all the people that are most advanced in the Looking Glass technology and seeing the past and future are the people from India. Because the people from India, their scientists think in thousands of years, in yugas. Whereas in the West, we think about the next quarter, you know, the next election. That's all we think about. We can't think in long term. But he makes it a very strong point, and I think you will agree with this, that our intention is so important. I've been a major meditator my whole life, and we need to get our act together spiritually because that will offset whatever will happen in 2012
Absolutely.
Or 2013. I may have been moved back a little bit myself. I don't know for sure, but all the things going on the planet, we can raise the consciousness, and that's what I'm about in my spiritual teachings. I'm a great student of Gurdjieff. I've been to his grave. I made a pilgrimage to France. Are you familiar with Gurdjieff at all?
Sure, of course.
And so that teaching is very important, the esoteric teachings that we are able to, you know, train our minds to raise our consciousness.
Well, I'm sure you'll you need to know that the people that are listening to this show are also people on the spiritual path. And we're all well aware how we create reality and the power of what we can do individually and united to raise the vibration, raise the frequency, and turn up the light. And I think that more and more people, part of the fact that we're faced with so much chaos and tragedy is because it's provoking us into understanding how tenuous life is and how important it is that we raise our vibration to save this planet.
I agree totally.
Oh, boy, it sure is a fun time. Before we reach the end of the hour, which is not yet, thank goodness, for those of you who might have tuned in late, we're speaking with Ron Garner. His website is area51et.com. We've been talking about some amazing stuff. One of my favorite things is the ET that was out at Area 51 who was able to get free from the torturous military, welcome to planet Earth, and back out to his home in the Zeta Reticula system, going through a stargate in my favorite place, Abydos, in Egypt. Amazing stuff. So, what about Bob Lazar? We've got 10 minutes left, so it's hard to introduce a new subject.
Okay, I'll give you my story about Bob Lazar. I met Bob Lazar. I videotaped John Mayer's 65th birthday in his home in Las Vegas 3.5 years ago. And it was a fascinating time because he had a lot of his pilot friends there, and he told stories about what he had done with this, flying for the CIA and so forth. But we talked about Bob Lazar. Now, Bob Lazar lives in Michigan now. He moved to Michigan about a year and a half ago. And Bob Lazar was a total skeptic of this subject in 1988 and didn't believe in UFOs, but he was friends with John Lear. And through all kinds of circumstances, which most people know, that he began working there, and so he... And John Lear says, okay, go work there and then tell us what goes on there. So he worked there for about a month, and then he came to John Lear's house there in Las Vegas on Hollywood Boulevard in Las Vegas and said, you're right, they have extraterrestrial craft there. And so John Lear says to Bob Lazar, what are you doing here? They're going to follow you. You can't come here directly from Area 51. You're crazy. And so Bob Lazar told John Lear, well, you took so much heat over your exposing all of this. I just had to come and tell you that you were right. So also Gene Huff was a part of this, and he's Bob Lear's. John Lear's, or Bob Lazar's best friend. And at this 65th anniversary of John Lear, the story came up that Bob Lazar had problems with his former wife, and in fact, the Black Ops told him that his ex-wife was having an affair, and he was all broken up about that, came to John Lear for consolence, for, because he wanted to save his marriage and so forth. And I won't get into much of that, but I'm just trying to show the depth of knowledge that John Lear has of Bob Lazar. He was his mentor, his confidant, and he buys the story totally, as he does the Dan Burry's crane story. He buys that totally, too. And
is Bob Lazar still alive?
Oh, yeah. No, he was there at this 65th birthday of John Lear. Yeah, he's only early 50s, and he moved to Michigan. He had he was in a missile silo in Roswell, New Mexico. He had his laboratory in a missile silo.
Age doesn't have much to do with life expectancy when you start reporting on black op operations, yeah?
Yeah, well, they shot out one of his tires on the freeway, and that's why he made the video and why he went on with George Knapp and KLAS TV there in Vegas to protect his life, because he figured if people knew about him, that it would be confirmation if he ended up dead. So Bob Lazar told John Lear all about this, and he told me about some of it. It's a real story, but there's a similar, as interesting as you bring this up, because Bob Lazar is a physicist. He's a scientist. He doesn't give talks. He doesn't write books. He's gone on coast to coast and a few times, but Dr. Dan Crane Burrish is the same way. He's been ordered by Majestic to tell the world what happened to him, but he wants to go back to his science. He gave a presentation at Caltech in 2008. That's one of my videos. It's one of the most profound videos you'll ever see. He talks about the Ganesh particle. We haven't gotten into that, but the Ganesh particle, some people call it the God particle. It comes from quartz crystal, and Dan has learned how to use that, and it heals any cells that it touches. Dan's PhD thesis was on the cure for breast cancer. I have that sitting on my desk right now. Of course, the AMA will not allow that to happen, but that's another story. So this Ganesh particle, Dan is still researching. That's one of the things he's doing right now. People always, well, what's he doing right now? Well, I don't know everything he's doing, but I know one of the things he's doing, researching this Ganesh particle. The military wants to turn it into a weapon. That's what military mindset wants to do. They want to turn everything into a weapon. But this Ganesh particle, I've tested it in the polluted waters here in San Pedro, and it cleared up for a certain period of time all the water there. And so we had the technology to clear up a lot of the water supply, but the black ops won't allow it out. But I think eventually they will.
I think eventually they're not going to have a choice. I think the gig is up.
It's really sad that the nuclear situation in Japan, but the overall picture, people are going to realize that nuclear is not the way to go. We have free energy. I have the schematics. We can harness this energy and save the planet if we could just get some people motivated to try and do it, get the scientists behind this.
And get these guys out of the way of blocking anything that resembles healing the planet, because they seem so hell-bent at destroying the planet.
That's right. And that's what I'm about. The rest of my life is going to be trying to tell this story. And
that's what I'm about, too. So let's join forces.
I'm with you. I've never been to England. I've been to France and Germany, but never been to England.
I'm in Italy. You're welcome to come.
Oh, I'm sorry, Italy. I've never been to Italy or England, so
let's make something happen, absolutely, because you're definitely a kindred soul, Ron.
Unfortunately,
we're out of time. You're going to have to come back on really soon, and we'll just take it from there, because there's so much we need to discuss with you.
Yeah, when I met the Dan Burry story 9 years ago, I have a half-finished documentary on Colonel Corso. I interviewed him in Roswell in 97. I have exclusive footage of Corso that nobody's ever seen.
Oh, my God. All right, listen. Unfortunately, we're at the end of the hour, so you will agree to come back on?
Anytime. I'm with you. I want to get this story out to as many people as possible.
All right, thank you. Now, you've been listening to Ron Garner. His site is area51et.com. He's got a book coming out soon called Whistleblowers at Area 51. He has these amazing videos of stuff that you're not probably supposed to see, and that he's doing his best to get out to the world. So you're going to want to check him out. I'm sure you agree he's one of the best guests I've had on my show. And that includes Stephen Bassett, Jim Mars, Stanton Freeman, all of the researchers that he named. We're all doing our best to break the embargo and bring the truth out. And that's our job, and that's what we need to do as we raise the spirit on planet Earth. So
thank you, Patricia, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. I'm going to call you about the whales and dolphins because, oh, that's just the most wonderful news. All right?
Okay, very good. We're signing off now.
All right. Thanks, Ron. All right, everybody. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix, the radio show that dares you to think outside the box of convention. And if you haven't been doing that tonight, then by cracky, you have not been listening. Stay tuned for more amazing information. Seek light. Seek understanding. Be fearless and know that we are going to turn this planet back around. And with that, and a cough, I send you my love. Nanu, nanu. Patricia Corey, signing out.